26. I slept the rest of that evening and through the night, waking up only when Imogen came to check on my bandages. There was so much I wanted to ask her, but someone else was always in the room with us, and any real conversation was impossible. I was more careful this time to let her do her job without giving her any particular attention, though I still felt the entire charade was ridiculous. Most of these servants came to Farthenwood in better circumstances than I had, and right now, I was much more like the servants than Connor. My friendships with Imogen or Errol or Mott shouldn't have threatened any of them. Morning brought stiffness to my muscles. I must have been too tired the day before to notice how sore they were, or maybe it was that I didn't have to move around much before now. Errol insisted on helping me dress, even brought Mott into the room to ensure I accepted that help. It wasn't necessary. Standing there with my arms out while Errol dressed me was about as much as I could do. With considerable struggle, I managed to stay awake that day, and even paid a semblance of attention to the morning tutors. Master Graves made it very clear that they had moved on without me and had no time to return to the lessons of the previous few days, so I would have to catch up as best as I could.
It's been a week since you came to Farthenwood, Sage, and you're no further along than the first day we started.
I told him that was probably because I'd only had two of his lessons and, in all fairness to myself, hadn't really bothered to pay attention to either of them. This only darkened his glares at me, and he focused the rest of the lesson on Rodin. Mistress Havala also said there wasn't enough time to review what had been discussed while I was, she generously used the word, indisposed, but gave me two books that she said contained much of the same information.
You probably can't read them without help, she said. Perhaps Tobias will help you in the evenings.
I'm certain that Tobias has already given me too much help, I said. Tobias gripped the sides of his chair and said whatever he might do to please Master Connor would please him. Rodin and Tobias did horseback and sword fighting lessons that afternoon. I was excused from participating, but Ma insisted I watch them. I watched the horseback lessons until they rode too far away for me to see them, and I fell asleep. The sword-fighting lesson was somewhat more interesting. Tobias was still a disaster with a sword, but Rodin had improved significantly. I wondered if he was naturally talented, or if he'd been putting in a lot of extra hours of practice. Mott commented on it, too. Rodin shrugged and said Cregan had offered to help him during free hours.
Cregan is skilled with a sword, but he's self-taught, Mott warned. With him as your teacher, you will learn to fight, but your style will not reflect the training of a prince.
My lessons with you will help me pass for the prince, Rodin said, but Cregan's lessons will keep me alive.
Dinner that evening was relatively quiet. Connor vaguely inquired after our progress, but said he'd already had full reports from all our instructors. He asked me what I was doing to try to catch up. I shrugged and said I planned to study Tobias's notes after he was asleep. Tobias shot me a glare, but Connor laughed.
And what is your response to that? Connor asked Tobias.
Tobias shook his head.
I have no notes, sir, and Sage couldn't read them if I did.
If you did have notes, Sage could get them and perhaps even read them. You had better be careful, Tobias, or Sage will end up as my choice.
That would be a mistake, sir, Tobias mumbled.
Your mistake, Connor corrected, is that you are more interested in pleasing me than in becoming like the boy Prince Jaren was. Learn to fight back, Tobias. Be strong.
His eyes drifted to me, and he shook his head.
Don't be smug about that, Sage. Jaren didn't seek fights either, the way you do. I can see you all still have much to learn about who the prince really was.
After we returned to our room that night, I fell onto my bed, not caring what clothes I slept in, as long as I could sleep. But Tobias sat at the desk, turning his chair to stare directly at me. Finally, I muttered, "You obviously have something to say, Tobias, so what is it?" His eyes narrowed.
I am strong enough to stop you, Sage. You too, Rodin. I'm warning you both not to push me any further.
Connor said the prince never sought out fights, I reminded him.
This isn't about being like Jaren, he said. It's about stopping you, and I will if I have to.
Grimacing with the sting in my back, I rolled over to face the wall. Before closing my eyes, I said, Connor will choose me this week, and you know it. You wouldn't dare to stop me. As tired as I was, I forced myself to stay awake for nearly an hour after that until I was sure both Rodan and Tobias were asleep. Because no matter what I said, it was becoming increasingly obvious that Tobias would at some point carry out his threat. 27. Mott was waiting for us after lessons the next day to tell us there would be no horseback riding that afternoon, nor sword fighting.
Cregan says you're all good enough on horseback to pass initial scrutiny, and Connor has other plans for you this afternoon.
Those other plans were dancing lessons in Connor's Great Hall, so Connor apparently had other ways to torture us beyond his dungeon walls. I grabbed my side and sat in a chair near the door.
I'm not dancing. It'll hurt. Today is the only time we can spare for these lessons, Connor said, walking in ahead of a small group of women. Surely a handsome young prince would never be so tired that he couldn't enjoy a dance with a lovely young lady.
Reluctantly I stood, though swallowing a laugh when I saw our three dancing partners. None of them were young, and lovely was a kind exaggeration. They were dressed in clothes similar to his other servants and had the rougher skin of women accustomed to physical labor. Rodan shared a grin with me. Tobias straightened his spine, but looked a little nervous.
Don't be shy, boys, Connor said. You don't have to romance them. It's just some dancing, and all of them are fine dancers.
We walked forward and made the decision of who our partner would be based on which lady happened to be standing closest to us. My partner was a woman in her 40s, who whispered to me that her name was Jean. She had curly hair that was probably once a pretty brown before it had grayed and faded. Her eyes were wide, contrasting with her thin lips and nose. Not a pretty face, but it was an interesting one. Connor began instructing us in a basic minuet, demonstrating the steps himself with Rodan's partner, then clapping his hands to a beat as we imitated him. Jean was pleasant and helpful, and forgiving with every mistake I made.
You're doing fine, she said.
It was a lie, and we both knew it, but I appreciated it nonetheless. Neither Tobias nor Rodan seemed to be doing much better. Connor remained patient with us, though, and after several tries, we all began to make the steps in a respectable manner. At a break between dances, Connor asked if my father was a musician.
As I've told you on more than one occasion, sir. Surely you play an instrument, then.
I've also told you my father was a poor musician. You cannot believe the student could rise higher than his teacher. Connor walked to the corner of the room, where a small instrument case was propped. He pulled out a fiddler and fitted the pieces together.
I'd like to hear you play, Sage, if you were taught by your musician father.
I'd leave my lovely dance partner alone, sir.
I'll dance with her, if you play something we can dance to.
I eyed Connor. Is this a test? With a tilt of his head, Connor said,
Everything is a test.
So I took the fiddler. It needed a bit of tuning, which was awkward for me at first. I'd actually never played a fiddler, but it was a basic wind instrument, and with only a little trouble at first, I could guess at the fingering. What I don't remember must be improvised, I warned them. Forgive me if I fail to do this song justice. Then I began to play. It wasn't a song for dancing, but was instead a sad melody that had always given me images of loneliness on a forgotten beach in the night. It was a tune that used to make my mother cry, and after a while, my father no longer played it. After a while, he no longer played any songs at all, but I never forgot the tune. When I finished, there was a hush in the room. I handed the fiddler back to Connor, who solemnly said,
You are right, Sage. The student cannot rise higher than his master. I believe we need to dance again.
I caught Connor's eye a few times over the next dance, wondering what he had intended by asking me to play. If I'd been lying about my father's hobby, all I would have had to say was that he never taught me. After the dance finished, Connor told us to rest a moment, then folded his arms and chuckled.
None of you will ever be great dancers, he said. But at least you won't humiliate yourselves either. We'll work a bit longer. Then I'll have each of you boys go and change clothes. You'll work in the kitchen tonight, learning from the servants there about what is expected in serving guests. You'll need to learn these roles because I'll have you serving the betrothed Princess Amarinda tomorrow evening.
When does she arrive, sir? Tobias asked.
I expect to receive her sometime late this evening, though she isn't planning to dine with us until tomorrow. Sage, have you been working on your accent? If you are called upon to speak to her, I won't have you replying with an Avenian accent.
I happen to be alone quite a bit in recent days, I said in a Carthian accent. It gave me a great deal of time to practice.
Not bad, Connor said with a smile. But you're still too soft on your consonant sounds. Tighten them up, and never let me hear the Avenian accent again.
I acknowledged Connor's request with a nod. Then Connor said,
I think we'll practice a waltz now. Take your partners by the hand, please.
Kitchen duty that afternoon was tedious. Our escort in the kitchen happened to be my dance partner, Jean, who I learned was more a supervisor than a servant. Connor had a large kitchen, and Jean took great pride in showing us how smoothly it operated.
The master occasionally has unexpected guests, so we always have a plan for last-minute meals, Jean said. We've enjoyed this week since you boys came. We're preparing a lot more food than usual, and our serving dishes come back empty.
Everything tastes so good here, Rodin said.
Tobias and I both smiled at that. It wasn't her decision who was made prince, so neither of us could figure out what he hoped to gain by complimenting her. Rodin answered that question a moment later when he noticed our grins.
It really does taste good, he whispered. You should have seen what they fed us at my orphanage. I don't even think it was food half the time.
Jean instructed us on the proper way to hold a tray and how to serve or retrieve dishes on the table. She showed us how to pour a drink and even let us sample a taste of Connor's best wine. I was interested in a detached sort of way, and so was Rodin. It was nice to know, but did me little good. However, Tobias leaned over to us at one point and whispered,
If Connor hadn't pulled us from the orphanages, this would likely have been our futures.
Not mine, I said firmly. Nothing in me could accept a life like this. Rodin quickly agreed.
You know what little you must, Jean finally said. Now make yourselves useful in here. There's always too much to do, and if we have you on loan, we'll use you.
She showed us a pile of dishes that needed to be washed. I pointed out there was really only room for two dishwashers and assigned myself the job of kneading dough at the other side of the room. Rodin and Tobias didn't seem to care, so Jean gave in and waved me away. I wandered over to the wood counter in the corner and picked up a lump of dough. After a minute, Imogen entered the kitchen, and Jean directed her to come over and help me. To my surprise, she didn't seem to object, and only moved a set of kitchen knives out of my way, giving herself room beside me to knead another lump of dough. I've done this before, I said, working my fingers into the warm dough. It was one of the jobs at the orphanage, but the dough here is much better. We ate from a lot of charity ingredients before, which almost always meant whatever was unfit for the upper classes. She glanced at me and I continued, I don't see why the upper classes object to food with weevils in it. They're very nutritious. That finally earned a real smile, even though it was far from the funniest thing I'd ever said to her. Then I realized the smile wasn't about me. Something in her had changed.
You're different, I said quietly.
Without looking up at me, she nodded. She couldn't tell me what it was, but she didn't need to. There was less fear in her than before.
Imogen!
A tall, square-cut man shouted from the far end of the kitchen. Based on his clothing, he was one of Connor's chefs.
Lazy girl!
Imogen swung around. I started forward, but she grabbed my wrist to hold me back.
Isn't that dough ready yet?
He said.
I've got to have it baked by this evening.
How could she have finished? I scowled. Every time she walked in here, you sent her out with another job. The chef crossed to me and shoved me against the brick wall. Pain lit across my bruised back and throughout my body,
but I somehow held my tongue.
Don't tell me how to operate in my kitchen,
he snarled.
Let him go,
Mott said, entering the kitchen. He grabbed my shirt and yanked me away from the chef's grasp, then motioned for Tobias and Rodin to follow him.
We're finished here.
As we walked out, he said to me,
Can't you go anywhere without causing a problem?
Is that who gives Imogen her bruises? I asked. Mott clenched his jaw.
It's clear that if you work from the kitchen tonight, one of you will end up killing the other. I'll assign you different duties.
Then with a parting glare, he walked ahead of us. Tobias and Rodin caught up to me as we followed Mott.
He hurt your back, Rodin said. I can tell by the way you're walking.
My back is fine. It wasn't true, but I felt braver for saying it.
It's your own fault if he did hurt it, Tobias said. Why do you do it?
I shrugged. What?
Aggravate people the way you do. You seem bent on making enemies here.
And you insist on making false friends. They're no different. Don't you ever get tired of pretending to be something you're not?
Like the prince?
Tobias arched his head.
No, I could pretend to be him for the rest of my life. Don't judge me just because you're not able to do the same.
His words hit me too close, and I fell behind him and Rodin as we walked back to our rooms. We both knew he'd won that round. 28. We were secluded in our room when the betrothed princess arrived later that night. Rodin suggested I sneak out and bring back a report of what she was like, which I was perfectly willing to do, but Tobias said he'd tell Mott if I left.
You can't have the advantage of seeing the princess before we do, Tobias said. Knowing you, you'll convince her tonight that you are the prince, and she'll have you crowned at the castle before Rodin and I are awake tomorrow.
I snorted, and then said, Now that you're on to me, I'll have to figure out an even cleverer plan. Mocking Tobias was risky, and probably unfair, but it was usually too hard to resist. I grabbed one of the books off his desk and brought it back to my bed, letting it fall open somewhere in the middle.
What are you doing?
Mistress Hovala said I'd have to study on my own to catch up. That's what I'm doing.
You can't read.
I said I can't read well, but I paid very close attention to Master Graves this morning, and I hope to read well enough to understand this book. Tobias folded his arms.
Do you even know what it's about?
I shook my head and flipped to another page. It would help if there were more pictures in it.
It's on early Carthian history. If you were going to study, you might choose a topic more relevant for convincing anyone you're a prince.
Great. Give me one of those kinds of books.
They're in the library, and we're not allowed to leave this room.
I turned several more pages of the book. Then I'll have to content myself with reading this one. Rodin chuckled and grabbed another book off Tobias's table.
Me too. Now you're a reader also?
Rising anger tinged Tobias's voice.
It'll be good practice.
Rodin settled onto his bed with a book. Tobias's face reddened.
You think this will convince Connor of anything? I'm twice as smart as either of you.
And half as strong as me or Rodin, even if we're asleep, I said. You have to do better, Tobias.
Is that a challenge?
He asked. I'd never challenge an inferior. Now go to sleep. You'll need rest before whatever humiliation comes your way tomorrow.
You sleep, Tobias said. You'll need some strength for sneaking out later tonight.
I laughed and tossed the book on the floor before lying down. But I didn't go to sleep. That was a luxury I couldn't afford. It was much later in the night before I finally decided to sneak out, this time through the secret passages. Climbing across the exterior walls of Farthenwood was a bad idea, since I still felt so weak. But as long as nobody else was in the passages, it would be a fine way to explore. I was gradually learning the exit points of the passages. They ran throughout Farthenwood, or at least to areas where Farthenwood's architect felt a person might want to secretly travel. One of my favorite exits took me into the hallway around the corner from my room. It helped to see what was happening on the outside when everyone thought we were safely inside. I left the passages and entered the hallway using that door. As always at this time of night, There were only a few servants wandering the halls, so as long as I was careful to find the shadows in Connor's home, I had access to most of the places I wanted to go. This time, I even got a glance down the hallway at who was guarding our room each night. I practically choked with laughter when I saw him. He might have been younger than the three of us, and he'd fallen asleep. He wore a sword, but the smallest buckle of the belt still hung loose around his waist. Clearly, Connor no longer considered any of us at risk for running. The one well-guarded room wasn't far from Connor's. The vigils in front of the door were unfamiliar to me, and they stood very alert. It had to be the guest bedroom for the betrothed Princess Almerinda. It was impossible to continue any farther through the hallway without risking the attention of her vigils, so I slipped back into the passages. Somewhere in there was a door leading directly into Almerinda's room, but using it for any reason was a terrible idea. It did occur to me that there might at least be some way to peek into the room without entering it. The curiosity of what Almerinda looked like was very strong. While feeling around for any place to view into the room, I felt a hand on my arm and the point of a knife at my back. It had been only a matter of time before the others discovered the passages too. "Is this how I have to prove my strength?" Tobias's voice was thick, and he sniffed loudly. I wondered if he was crying. "Where'd you get the knife?" I asked calmly. Calm was important here. "I stole it from the kitchen." He pressed the long end of the blade into my back, and I stiffened as I felt it cut. It was a razor-sharp knife. "If the whipping before wasn't enough, maybe I can stop you." "From what?" I said, gasping. Blood trickled down my back, though I couldn't tell if he'd opened the old wound or created a new one. "Stop you from being considered. I saw Connor's admiration for you while we practiced our dancing. But how can he? You're the least worthy of the title, the lowest of us three." "And you're the biggest coward," I hissed, then caught my breath in my throat as his blade cut deeper. "Don't call me a coward," Tobias said. "I'm not." "Have you come here to kill me?" I asked. "Because I'll scream when you do, and it'll wake up the princess and probably a whole lot of other people, and you'll get into trouble." "You'll be dead." "Yes, but you'll be in trouble." Tobias lightened the pressure on the blade. "This is just a warning for you to back down. I will be king." "If you don't want to kill me, then lower the knife." Tobias released my arm, then said, "Don't try anything with me. I'll keep this knife ready if you do." I stumbled away from him, my head spinning. What am I going to try in here? You know that if you're this paranoid as king, it'll eat you alive. Maybe King Egbert should have been more paranoid. Then he wouldn't be dead right now. I stopped and grabbed onto the wall for support. It took every bit of my concentration not to be sick all over him. "You okay?" Tobias asked. Not that he cared. When I began walking again, he followed, adding, "What's the point of wandering around here every night?" The sting gradually eased. It was still fierce, but the whipping had hurt worse. Maybe he hadn't cut me as badly as I first thought. "Connor has you and Rodin in his control," I said. "Not me." "Not me either," Tobias quickly said, but from the tone of his voice, it was obvious that even he didn't believe it. "I'd like to go to our room now," I said. "I'm tired, and you hurt my back." "I'm not apologizing for that. I'd rather keep you weak." "What a person of honor you are," Tobias snorted. "A statement like that coming from you?" That brought a faint smile to my face. "Then let's hope Connor chooses Rodin, so that Carthia has some hope of an honorable king." Tobias didn't like that, and he strutted ahead of me. "Rodin would have this kingdom destroyed in a generation, with or without Connor's lead. He has no thought that someone else hasn't put there. I shudder to think either of you has any chance of being chosen." If Connor's choice was that obvious, my back wouldn't hurt so much right now. "My warning is real," Tobias said, "and if you try to tell anyone about this, I'll see that Rodin takes the blame. I know how to persuade Connor." "You have no control over Connor,"
You may wear the crown one day, but he'll be king. I'll let him think he has control, then get rid of him. Where are we?
Despite the pain I still felt, I couldn't help but smile wickedly. Connor's room is on the other side of this wall. Pray he is a deep sleeper, or else he heard every word you just said.
Tobias made a sound in his throat and put his ear to the wall to see if he could hear Connor on the other side. I used the moment to grab his arm and twist it behind his back, and then withdrew my own knife from inside my clothes.
Where'd that come from?
You're not the only one who stole from the kitchen. I withdrew his knife from his belt and whispered in his ear. You're in a lot of trouble, Tobias. Connor knows about the notes you made, your plans to get rid of him. You've already lost. In a few days, he's going to kill you. Then I hit him over the back of the head with the butt of my knife, and he fell unconscious.
29. Tobias was asleep in bed when I woke up, so he must have found his way back to our room sometime in the night. The idea that I'd slept through his walking freely around the room made me uncomfortable. Usually, I was a light sleeper, and I didn't like the idea of wondering what he might have been tempted to do to me in my sleep. Rodin was already awake, and still working on the book he'd taken off Tobias's desk the night before.
I can figure out a lot of these words, he said. You should have paid more attention to Master Graves. I think he could have helped you.
I can't pretend to be interested in someone who's so boring, I muttered. Rodin rolled his eyes and went back to his book while I got out of bed and began to get dressed. It would irritate Errol, I knew, but lately that fact was more motivation than deterrent.
There's blood all over your shirt, Rodin said.
Noticed that, did you?
Rodin closed the book and came closer to me. It looks like your shirt was cut too. What happened?
Do I need a bandage?
How should I know? Let me call Errol.
I pulled off my shirt and threw it into the fireplace, which still bore a few smoldering ashes. The alcohol that Imogen had used for me was in the corner of our room. I poured just enough of it onto the shirt to stir up the fire again.
What did you do that for?
Rodin asked. He made enough noise that Errol and the other two servants took it as a sign that it was time to enter from the hallway. I was never sure what time they arrived each morning, but they always came in when they heard us talking.
I'll help you finish dressing, sir.
Errol said the words as if he were tired of speaking them. He knew I didn't want his help, and that was especially true right now. I turned so that my back was facing the wall. I'll dress myself, and I'll do it privately. Tobias opened his eyes.
Will everyone speak quieter? I have a terrible headache here. Sage's back is bleeding again, Rodin said to Errol.
Everyone's eyes turned to me. Errol walked between me and the wall. A gasp escaped his lips. Then he said,
This is a new wound. Where did it come from?
I shrugged, not yet ready with an explanation. Whatever I said, it'd have to be a lie. Although the truth would ruin Tobias's last hope to become the prince, it did me no favors either. Errol gave up asking for details and said,
The cut isn't so deep, but we have to take care of it.
Just give me a bandage and I'll wrap it myself, I said. Errol shook his head and left the room. It was a good thing the 2 weeks were almost ended. I doubted whether he could tolerate me for much longer.
I'm already dressed, Rodin scowled at his servant who was tugging at his shirt. Get out!
You're dismissed too, Tobias told his man, a new servant who avoided me as often as possible.
We need to talk in private. Shut the door behind you.
Immediately after we were alone, Rodin leapt across the room, grabbed Tobias by the shoulders, and shoved him hard against the wall.
You did that to him? Were you going after me next? Check me for a knife if you think I did it.
Tobias looked sideways at me.
I don't have anything that could make a wound like that, do I, Sage?
You're afraid of what Rodin would find if he searched? I asked. Tobias threw up his hands, and Rodin pulled back Tobias's blanket and checked his pillow. Then he lifted Tobias's mattress and gasped. Tobias's face paled as Rodin withdrew the knife Tobias had used against me the night before. Dried blood still stained the tip of the blade.
I'd made sure of that.
How'd that get there?
Tobias whispered, his eyes narrowed as they met mine.
Oh, of course. Well, Sage has a knife too.
Do you think so? I said. I'm sure the kitchen staff will find there's only one knife missing. But I let Rodin search my things anyway. No knife was there, and Tobias's face paled even further.
I've got to tell Connor, Rodin said. This goes too far, Tobias. Please don't, Tobias begged. Connor already thinks I have a plan to get rid of him. If he thinks I tried to do anything to Sage, he'll have my head.
Connor should punish you, I said. Being chosen as the prince is the least of your worries now. Tobias's eyes filled with tears.
Help me then.
You nearly killed me last night. Should I care what happens to you now?
Please, I'll do anything.
You're asking me to lie for you? Then I'd be the one in trouble. Why would I do that? His voice raised in pitch.
Please, Sage, anything you want. Help me and I'll fight for you.
He looked terrified, probably exactly as I had looked when Connor told Mott to take me to his dungeon. Tobias had played into my hands, but I felt sorry for him nonetheless. I'll help you, but at this price. It's time to fail. You will be less intelligent, less impressive, and certainly less prince-like.
Is what you told me last night true? Tobias asked. Does he really know about the notes?
I nodded and watched as tears filled his eyes.
Then he's going to kill me anyway.
What if I promise that he won't? I said. Back off and I promise that you will live, or else I'll die trying to save you. Now not only was Tobias out of the competition, but someone at Farthenwood owed me his life. Errol returned to our room, accompanied by Imogen and Mott. Luckily no attention was on Rodin, who quickly hid Tobias's knife back under the mattress. Mott strode across our long room in less than half a dozen long steps. He turned me around to examine my back, then cursed loudly.
The master must hear of this. Tell me how this happened, or I'll take you to him for questioning. You know how that will end.
I glanced at Tobias, who nodded his agreement to my terms. It's embarrassing, I said. I tried to sneak out last night through the window. I got caught on the window frame and it impaled my back.
This is more than a scrape on your skin, Sage. You've been cut.
The window has a jagged edge, I insisted. I'm lucky not to be hurt worse. But it's my own fault because I should never have been out there. For an extra touch, I shrugged innocently and added, I hope nobody would notice.
How could you think we wouldn't notice a wound like that?
Mott cursed under his breath.
Was this your attempt at obeying the master's rules?
All I wanted was to look outside, I said. It would have been hard to go anywhere off that ledge.
It'd be impossible, Mott said. But you might have fallen to your death in the attempt.
He inhaled, then added,
Not a word of this to the master, then, but I must punish you. I hesitate because I know how weak you must be from the last few days, but you'll miss today's meals.
I started to protest. Then Mott arched his eyebrows and said,
Or shall we leave it to the master to choose a punishment?
I wasn't hungry anyway, I said. Princess Amarinda had sent word that she would remain in her bedroom all morning, so Mott called Tobias and Rodin to accompany him to breakfast with Connor and brought in Imogen to take care of my wound. She immediately went to work on washing away the blood. Her manner was cool and businesslike, but her touch as she cleaned my back was as gentle as ever.
He knows you're lying, she whispered.
Am I such a bad liar?
I'll have to wait until you tell the truth so I can compare the differences.
She paused when I drew in a sharp gasp, and when she continued, the cloth was pressed so lightly on my back I could barely feel it.
How did it really happen?
A knife.
Who held that knife?
I hesitated, and she added,
One of the other two boys, obviously. It isn't a stab wound, though. This was done with the long edge of the blade.
You know your knife wounds.
I heard the chef say this morning that one of his knives has gone missing. He keeps them sharp.
That's why you were kneading bread, to get close to the knife block.
Actually, it was to keep Tobias away from the knives. He'd already stolen one, and that was as much damage as I wanted him able to cause me. I thought that would at least get a smile or a chuckle, but she continued as if she hadn't heard me.
I checked first thing this morning. The knife you took is back in its place, and I found a few drops of blood on the floor.
I thought I had them all cleaned up.
Frustrated, Imogen slapped at my bed.
Sage, please, someone tried to kill you last night.
Not really, he just wanted me to think he could.
Why must you play these games?
Because now there are only two people competing to become the prince. Even without seeing her, I knew Imogen was frowning in disapproval. But she only said,
You know what I have to do now. It's going to sting.
I'm getting used to... I started to say before she pressed the wet towel to my back and made me howl. Apparently, I'd reached the end of her sympathies.
Maybe you want Errol back, she said.
Maybe I do, I moaned. At least he wouldn't scold me the whole time.
Someone should be scolding you, she said. If you're not strong enough to handle all these injuries, you should stop getting them. You'll never convince anyone you're a prince this way.
Imogen began to wrap a new bandage around me. This one had to go diagonally over my shoulder and down below the older bandage. After she knotted it, she noticed the change in my mood and said more softly,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. You'll do fine in convincing them.
I remained facing the wall. What if I don't? What if after Connor chooses me, they look at me and only see Sage?
Would that be so bad? Just to be who you are?
This time I looked back at her, grinning. You mean other than being executed for stealing the crown? She laughed.
Yes, other than that.
Then I grew serious again. What about you? If you were in the court when I'm presented, would you bow to me? After a moment, she slowly shook her head.
I hope Connor chooses you, and I think if he does that you'll be able to convince them. You'll be a fine king one day. But I know too much, and I won't bow to a fraud.
I turned away as she left the room. Unfortunately, I understood exactly how she felt. Nobody should have to bow to a false prince. 30. As the day progressed, it became evident that I would eat better on this period of punishment for Mott than I'd eaten yet since coming to Farthenwood. Tobias snuck me back better than half of his breakfast, and Errol left some food in my room while cleaning up, expressing false dismay after I ate that it was food intended for somebody else. We were to remain in our room in private study because of Princess Amarinda being in the house, but after lunch was brought to us, Tobias gave me all of his lunch, and Rodin shared half. You owe me nothing, I said to Rodin.
Not now. But if Connor does choose you, then I hope you'll make the same promise to me that you did with Tobias, to save my life.
And will you make that promise to me as well? I asked him. Rodin shrugged. I can't make Connor do what I want, not even if I were king. I clapped Rodin on the shoulder. Then for the sake of my life, I'll have to continue hoping to be named the prince. Near us, Tobias's feet dropped to the floor, and he banged on the door for his servant. When he arrived, Tobias said he had to use the toilet, the only reason we could be allowed out of the room. Even our lessons would be held in this room for the day.
Do you think Tobias is so angry that he'll try to kill you again?
Rodin asked after Tobias had gone. He wasn't trying to kill me last night. He just wanted me to think he could.
Same thing as far as I'm concerned. Though I guess in the end, it worked out better for you.
Oh, Rodin's eyes widened.
Did you plan for that to happen?
Tobias was getting desperate. Once he took the knife when we were in the kitchen, I knew something was bound to happen soon.
Why didn't you just report that he had a knife?
There's forgiveness for that. But Connor wouldn't forgive what he did last night, and Tobias knows it, so he had to agree to my terms. Rodin slowly shook his head.
You let him cut you.
A smile spread across my mouth. Well, I let him make the first cut. I thought that'd scare him into stopping. I wish it had, because it really did hurt. Rodin laughed and shook his head incredulously. You're the craziest person I've ever met. Tobias may be more educated than you, but he's not the smartest of us. I chuckled, but Rodin turned serious and added, It really is down to you and me, Sage. I've still got to try to win. You know that. It's cruel, this game of ours, I said. Between us, you're Connor's favorite now. Rodin nodded. You can bait me all you want. I won't try to kill you. You could, though, I said. I've seen you out practicing swords with Cregan. Cregan hopes Connor chooses me, and he wants me to be ready for when he does. Rodin's voice raised in pitch. What's wrong with that? Nothing. I'm just glad to hear you're practicing for Connor's benefit and not mine. I'm running out of places to get hurt. I don't see why that's funny. I think you must like the pain, because you're constantly pushing people until they hurt you. I definitely don't like the pain, I said firmly. So if you do decide to kill me, make it quick. Rodin's laugh came without humor, and we finished lunch with little more conversation. When Tobias returned a few minutes later, Master Graves had already arrived and begun a particularly dreary lesson on the great books and fine art of Carthia. Tobias lay on his bed for the entire lesson, causing Master Graves to remark that he never thought he'd see a lazier student than me. I felt a little sorry for Tobias, watching him pretend to be less than he was, but unfortunately, that was his situation now. Errol and the other two servants came in mid-afternoon to get us ready for the charade of being servants to Princess Amarinda that evening. Why so early? Rodin asked.
You may have been clean orphans this week, his servant told him, but you're still orphans. It'll take a bit more cleaning up to make you worthy of the betrothed princess.
Have you seen her? I asked. If he had, the servant wouldn't acknowledge it. But while he gathered my clothes, Errol whispered to me,
I've seen her. She looks as beautiful as any princess could. You should feel lucky to be able to serve her tonight.
I was too tired to feel lucky, or to care what the princess looked like. I told Errol he could take my place tonight, which he said was fine if I'd do the laundry in his place. That was the end of our bargaining. Making us worthy servants included trimming the uneven ends of our hair so that it would tie back neatly, filing our nails, and lecturing us on the importance of always standing up straight around anyone we served. Unfortunately for Errol's best efforts on my behalf, the shorter side of my hair refused to stay out of my face. Finally, he gave up and told me to keep it pushed back whenever I was around the princess. We both knew I probably wouldn't. When we were finished, they placed us in front of mirrors. Our white undershirts were cut closer to the arms, to avoid the sleeves touching any of the food as it was served. The vests we wore over them were simple, earth-colored, and laced up the front, and the boots were low and second-hand. I snorted a laugh. Everything here is about costumes. We don't know the first thing about being servants, but they've certainly dressed us for the part. This is my part, Tobias mumbled beside me. Now.
I like them.
Rodin twisted in an attempt to see how he looked from the back.
It's easier to move in these than the clothes Connor has had us in all week.
Mott entered the room and surveyed each of us. I wondered if he'd polished his bald head. It looked shinier than usual, and he wore clothes nearly as fancy as Connor's. He was to be distinguished tonight as something more than a servant, though still not worthy to sit at the table. With a very stern voice, he said,
As long as none of you does anything stupid, I believe tonight will be successful. Here are some things each of you must remember. Never address a master first, and never look them in the eye unless they are speaking specifically to you. You follow my directions, and never take any initiative with the princess unless I order it.
Looking straight at me, Mott added,
You three must remember that you are in disguise. The worst thing that could happen would be for the princess to remember meeting you here tonight after you are presented at court. That cut is still evident on your face, Sage.
It'll be healed by the time I'm presented at court, I said. Besides, Imogen once served us with a bruise on her cheek, so this should only help me fit in better with the other servants. Mott didn't rise to my remark.
And how are the wounds on your back?
specifically the one caused by the window.
If I'd had more to eat today, they'd probably be healing faster.
Mott smirked and glanced at Errol for an answer.
No signs of infection, sir,
Errol reported.
That's good, Mott said, because I'd expect a dirty window to have caused infection. I did hear that a knife was missing from the kitchen last night, one of the chef's sharpest blades. Those are kept very clean.
Only one knife was missing?
Tobias glanced at me, and then quickly looked away when I tilted my head in response to his silent question. He whispered something under his breath. I'm sure some sort of curse aimed at me. That wasn't a problem. The devils were used to receiving curses with my name on them.
One knife, Mott said, walking over to stand directly in front of Tobias. With a blade about as long as Sage's wound. Do you know anything about it?
Tobias took a step backward, and his eyes darted around as he searched for a response, but I spoke up. None of us would know where the chef misplaced the knife. And fortunately, I have no intention of going out that particular window again, so there should be no injuries in the future.
Mott scoffed, making it clear he didn't believe me, but all he said was,
Line up behind your servants, boys. The dinner will be ready soon.
31. Connor's dinner that night was served in the Great Hall, not the dining room where we'd eaten all week. Several guests were already there, but the princess and her parents, who apparently had accompanied her to Farthenwood, had not yet entered. I was assigned as a door servant, with no apparent function other than to stand beside the doors of the Great Hall and observe as other servants came and went. Tobias's and Rodin's assignment was no better. They stood at the far end of the room, tasked with the job of closing the curtains if the setting sun got in anyone's eyes. Mott announced Princess Amarinda's arrival, along with the entrance of her parents and some of their courtiers. Amarinda was as beautiful as Connor had described her, with chestnut brown hair swept away from her face and falling in thick curls down her back, and piercing brown eyes that absorbed her surroundings. As she recognized Connor, her entire face lit up with a smile that was warm and inviting. Here, in Connor's home, the guest had made the owner feel welcome. Connor stood, along with the others at his table, and bowed to Princess Amarinda and to her parents. Master Graves had told us about them, and how Amarinda came to be the betrothed princess. The alliance between Amarinda and the house of King Ecbert was made at her birth. She was 3 years younger than Darius, and the product of a lengthy search by Ecbert. He wanted a foreign girl whose connections were powerful enough to forge a marriage that would create a bond between her country and Carthia, but not a direct heir to the throne, who would have political ambitions of her own. Amarinda was a niece to the King of Bymar. Before she was even old enough to crawl as an infant, her parents had promised her to whoever inherited Ecbert's throne, most likely Darius. And although she'd never been given a choice in marriage, the older Amarinda became, the more her admiration for Darius grew. Both were said to be eager for the time when she would be of age and they could marry. Amarinda stopped when she passed me beside the door.
What are you staring at?
Whatever rules Mott had given us blurred in my head. I could speak to her if she was addressing me, but she was only addressing me because I'd looked right at her, which was not allowed.
Forgive him, Highness, Mott said, stepping forward.
No forgiveness is requested. I merely wondered what a servant found so interesting.
I looked to Mott to see if I should answer. With a stern warning in his eyes, he nodded permission at me, and I said, You've got dirt on your face. She arched her eyebrows.
Is that a joke?
No, Your Highness. On your cheek? Amarinda turned to her attendant, who flushed and wiped the dirt off.
Why didn't you tell me before I walked in here?
Amarinda asked her.
You led the way, Highness. I didn't see it. But he did, and he's only a servant.
She turned back to me apologetically.
Before leaving my room, I had the window open and paused to look out. I must have gotten some dirt on my face then.
I never said the dirt detracted from your beauty, Highness, I told her, only that it was there. With a somewhat embarrassed smile, She nodded at me in return, and then continued on, taking her seat. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught Connor looking at me, though his expression was so controlled I couldn't tell whether he was amused, relieved, or furious. Dinner smelled so good as it was served that it took considerable willpower not to reveal that I was in disguise at that moment and to sit down to eat with the others. A large roast had been prepared, with boiled carrots and potatoes, hot bread, and some sort of imported cheese, the name of which I didn't recognize when Connor offered it to Amarinda. Imogen was one of the servants of the meal. I noticed a cut on her forehead, and wondered if Connor would dismiss that as yet another clumsy moment. No matter how long I stared at her as she served, she avoided my eye each time she entered or exited the room. Had I offended her somehow? Or was she keeping herself away from the increasing danger that surrounded Connor's plans? Across the room, Tobias was disinterested and lackluster. He stared at the floor, and soon faded into the background. Rodin looked hungry, and I caught him staring at the princess with a powerful expression of admiration. The conversation at the table began with shallow pleasantries. Connor described his life in the country, away from the politics of Driliad. Amarinda discussed her travels as she toured Carthia in the recent weeks. Her parents understood that as an heir to the throne, she was far more important than they were, and deferred to her in leading the conversation. After the main course was served, Connor steered the conversation directly to the topic I was sure he had intended for us to hear, the plans for her eventual wedding and ascension to the throne. Amarinda pressed her lips together, then said,
"Perhaps there will never be a wedding."
She glanced over at Connor, who feigned appropriate concern. After a moment, she added,
"There is a rumor that came to me only a few days ago regarding the king and queen, and their son."
"Oh?" Connor's wide eyes actually looked curious. He knew exactly what that rumor was, and I couldn't help but respect his acting skills.
"You haven't heard it?"
"I was told the king and queen and their son are touring the northern country, which they often do at this time of year."
"And may I ask when you last saw them?"
"It's been a few weeks," Connor said. "Before their trip to Galen."
"And they were well?"
"Certainly."
Amarinda's father spoke up.
"Then the rumor cannot be true."
He heaved a sigh of relief and took his wife's hand. She also looked relieved.
"Rumors have always surrounded the royal family," Connor said, as if the matter were settled. "It's the cheapest entertainment for everyday folk."
There was laughter at the table, except for Amarinda, whose solemn voice took control of the room.
"I heard they're dead. Murdered."
The laughter fell silent, and she continued,
"All three of them, poisoned during supper and dead by morning."
Mott glanced at me from his position and shook his head, warning me not to react. I forced a disinterested blank expression onto my face, despite the churning in my stomach. If I reacted, Connor would change the subject. But I needed them to continue talking about it, because no matter how easily he could avoid giving us more details, he'd have a harder time dodging the princess. However, the one question at the top of my mind was one I knew she'd never ask. Would the person who steps in as the prince become the next victim? Connor leaned forward and clasped his hands together.
"Highness, you are scheduled to be at the castle in Driliad tomorrow, correct?"
When she nodded, he said,
"Let the rumor lie until then. Whether it's true or false, it will be verified once you're there."
"Waiting is more easily said than done." Amarinda's voice was heavy with sadness. "If there's no heir, there's no betrothed princess. I'll be a widow without having married."
"Even if the rumor is true, there may be another way," Connor said. "Perhaps all is not lost for you, or for Carthia."
Amarinda arched an eyebrow, curious. Connor waited several seconds to continue, which I knew was to increase her anticipation. It was heartless, even cruel. Finally, he said,
"What if Prince Jaren were alive?"
Amarinda froze. Everyone at the table did, except Connor, who was enjoying this moment far too well. He manipulated those around him as though we were all pawns in his twisted game.
I hated that my life had become entwined with his. Finally, Amarinda's mother said,
"Everyone knows Prince Jaren was killed by pirates 4 years ago. Are you telling us this is not so?"
"I'm only saying that there is always hope."
Connor then addressed himself to Amarinda.
"Highness, perhaps you may soon claim the throne after all."
"Am I that shallow?"
Amarinda stood, angry.
"Do you think I cared about the throne and not the prince? You talk about Jaren's return as if it would solve all our problems, but it's Darius who concerns me. I need to know if he is alive."
She closed her eyes a moment, regaining calm, then said more softly,
"You must forgive me, but I'd like to return to my room. I have a headache."
Her father rose to escort her out, but she raised a hand to stop him.
"No, father. You should stay and continue the evening. My ladies will accompany me."
"My man will see you to your room,"
Connor said, gesturing at Mott. Amarinda eyed me, and I lowered my head, willing her to look anywhere else.
"That boy can see me there."
Connor hesitated, then smiled and nodded his permission at her. I wondered if perhaps he wasn't allowed to refuse her, or maybe he liked her suggestion. I didn't. "I don't know the way, Highness," I said. It was a stupid lie, and poorly told. Hers was the room where I had bathed on my first day at Farthenwood.
"I do. All I ask is for an escort."
Connor waved me away, so I bowed to her and we walked out into Connor's great hallway. I led the way up the master staircase, which seemed endless on this trip. All I wanted was to take her to her room, then get away. Behind me, Amarinda said,
"You've obviously never escorted royalty before. Do you expect me to keep up with you at this speed? I set the pace, boy."
I stopped, but did not turn around. "My apologies," I mumbled.
"You do not have my forgiveness yet. Let's see how you do from here."
When she was close behind me, I continued walking, slower this time.
"What is your name?"
she asked. "Sage."
"That's it."
"I'm a servant, Highness. Do I require more of a name?"
"I am known to most only as Amarinda. Am I a servant as well?"
She supplied her own answer.
"Of course I am. I exist only to ensure there is a reputable queen for Carthia when the time comes. Have you heard of Prince Darius?"
"Of course."
"Have you heard the rumors of his death?"
"I've heard them." And they weren't rumors. She touched my arm to get my attention. I stopped, but kept my gaze low.
"Is he really dead, Sage? If you know, you must tell me. Perhaps you know someone who works in the castle at Driliad. Surely you servants talk with one another."
For the first time, I turned to face her, though I didn't dare look her in the eyes. The servants wonder what Amarinda will do if she has to marry Prince Jaren to gain the throne. If he is alive, of course. Amarinda didn't answer for a very long time. Finally, she said,
"You speak too boldly for a servant."
I continued walking again. Amarinda caught up to me and said,
"Is Jaren really alive? Whether the king's family is living or dead, if Jaren is alive, he must be presented at court."
I stopped in front of Amarinda's door, still keeping my eyes on the floor. "Here's your room, m'lady."
"You told me you didn't know where it was."
And quickly realized what a stupid lie it had been. Rather than respond to her, I asked, "Is there anything else you need?"
"Do you wonder why I asked you to escort me, Sage?"
I shook my head and might have sighed a little too loudly. My back hurt from so much standing. I hadn't eaten yet, and I was tired of pretending. Beyond that, I didn't want to hear that a girl who'd have to marry me one day, if I was declared Prince Jaren, really loved the prince's older brother.
"I asked you here because you spoke honestly to me before. If I'd enter that room with a face smeared in mud and asked another servant how I looked, he'd have bowed and told me I looked as beautiful as ever. When you're in my position, Sage, you come to realize how few people you can trust."
She waited, expecting me to respond. When met with silence, she went on.
"So I trust your opinion on my dilemma. Should I continue on to Driliad, hoping Prince Darius will greet me there, but knowing in my heart that something is wrong? Or shall I stay away, knowing that if there is no Darius, I am no longer a betrothed princess and have no place in Driliad?
This time I looked directly at her. Although her eyes were so perceptive, I immediately looked away again.
You should go to the castle, Highness. You should always choose on the side of hope. That's good advice. I have less of a headache now than before, Sage. Thank you for that.
She smiled sadly.
Do you envy me as a royal?
I shook my head. The closer I got to the castle in Driliad myself, the more I dreaded it.
Many do. I'm glad you can appreciate your station in life as a servant. I'm a servant too, you know. Perhaps with finer clothes and servants of my own. But few choices about my life belong to me. We're not so different, you and I.
She was closer to the truth than she realized, but I held my tongue and stared at the ground.
Will you not look at me?
No, my lady. If I cannot look at you as an equal, I will not look at all. She placed a hand on my cheek and softly kissed the other one, then whispered,
Remember this moment then, Sage, when someone of my status offered a kindness to someone of yours. Because next time we meet, if Darius is dead, I will no longer be anyone of importance.
Then she entered the room with her ladies in tow. Only after her door was shut did I look up again. Darius was dead, and very soon she and I would meet as equals, but I had the feeling it wouldn't be a day she ended up celebrating. 32.
Where are you going?
Maud asked as I began walking away. He was never far behind. To my room, my back hurts.
How will it look to everyone at dinner if the servant who left with Amarinda fails to return?
How will it look if that servant's bandages bleed through and he drips blood on Connor's dining table?
Come on, Mott said with a sigh. I'll walk you to your room.
You don't have to. I know the way.
Saving you from getting lost is not the reason I'm here. Tell me, what did you think of the betrothed princess?
I think she loves Darius.
There's plenty of time for her to learn to love Jaren. Besides, this is the way of life for royals. They do their duty to their country, and if they are very lucky, it will sometimes bring them happiness.
I don't want anyone to do their duty for me, I grumbled. A charade like that is not for her.
Connor is preparing you to wear a mask for the rest of your life, Mott said. It's better that your queen pretends to love you, because if she truly did, she would only love a lie.
That hardly made me feel better. Errol was sitting on the bench just outside my bedroom door. He stood as he saw us coming.
Are you ill?
He asked me.
Get me some dinner, I growled, pushing past him to enter my room. And no, I don't need help dressing.
Ironically, I did need help. My shoulders and back had stiffened over the past few hours of standing, and with every movement, I felt like my wounds might tear open again. When Errol returned with a tray of food several minutes later, he found me sitting on the floor with an unbuttoned shirt and vest. Errol set the tray on Tobias's desk, and then silently went to the wardrobe to gather my nightclothes. He was able to pull off my shirt without causing me too much pain, and, without asking, checked my bandages.
Imogen is occupied at the dinner downstairs, he said. You must let me clean those wounds. They look hot.
I leaned forward, which took less work than arguing. He soaked a towel in the alcohol and pressed it to my back. I arched it with the inevitable sting, then relaxed as it slowly passed.
Every servant at Farthenwood knows Tobias cut you, Errol murmured.
I'd be surprised if the master doesn't hear of it soon.
The servants are mistaken. I was trying to climb out a window.
We hear things, Sage, more than anyone knows.
Then you obviously know why Rodin and Tobias and I are here. Are Connor's servants loyal to him, to this plan?
Shortly after you came, Connor impressed upon us the sacred nature of what he's doing, how important it is to Carthia. To be sure, he threatened us dearly if word of his plan leaks outside Farthenwood. But he shouldn't worry, nor should you. This is a secret we will all carry to our graves. If you are chosen as prince, I will treat you just as I would a true royal.
With that, he finished bandaging me up. He pulled my nightclothes on, and even fastened them in front, which I was more than capable of doing. When he stood to leave, I said, "Thanks for helping tonight, Errol. Thanks for helping every night. I know I'm difficult."
"I'll take that as an apology, sir. Your dinner is on the desk there. Good night."
I was in bed when Rodin and Tobias came into the room. Tobias entered more quietly than usual and lay down on his bed indifferently. Rodin crossed over to me and said,
"Connor was furious that you didn't return to the dining room tonight. I heard him ask Mott to come get you right now."
I groaned.
"How can he expect us to see ourselves as royalty when he treats us as slaves?"
Errol entered the room and began rummaging through my drawers.
"I'm sorry, Sage, but it's true. Connor has asked to see you. Mott is waiting outside to take you to see him."
I winced as I rolled out of bed. Errol held up clothes for me, but I shook my head. If he asks for me at night, he'll find me in nightclothes.
"It's inappropriate," Errol said.
"And it's indecent of him to summon me when he knows I'm asleep."
I opened the door to leave, but Mott blocked the doorway and shook his head at me.
"I won't bring you to the master like that. Allow Errol to dress you, or I'll do it."
I shut the door in his face and held out my arms to Errol, who hurried forward, clothes in hand. Minutes later, Mott was walking me, fully dressed, down to Connor's office. "Am I in trouble?" I asked.
"That depends on your answers to his questions."
Connor was in the middle of writing something when we entered his office. Mott directed me to stand in front of his desk, but I sat. A minute or two passed before Connor even acknowledged I was there. Finally, he set the quill down and looked up at me.
"What did you think of her?"
"The princess?" I shrugged. "She's beautiful." "I'd heard the betrothed princess was more horse than woman."
"Bite your words," Connor hissed. "You're speaking of the future queen of Carthia. That is, if the prince is found. And yes, she has most unexpectedly become a beautiful young woman. Why did she choose you to escort her out?"
"Because I told her about the spot of dirt on her face before. I think she appreciated the honesty."
"You're lucky she did. She might as easily have had you whipped for being disrespectful."
"I've already been whipped."
"And stabbed, I hear."
"Mott has my story on that incident, sir."
"A story which is probably a lie."
"At Farthenwood, lies and truth blur together."
"Only lies in pursuit of the truth, Sage."
My body ached with tiredness. All I wanted was to finish this pointless conversation and go back to sleep. But there was one question I needed answered. "Why did you allow me to go with her? When you bring me to court, she'll recognize me."
"If I bring you to court, don't mistake my tolerance for you as any sort of favoritism. Quite the contrary."
"My question stands, sir. Why did you allow me to go with her?"
"The possibility of her recognizing you did concern me for a moment. Then I decided you can easily explain that I kept you in hiding here until you could be presented at court. The fact that you two already met could be seen as an advantage. Now I have some questions for you."
"I have a few more questions first." Connor arched an eyebrow.
"Oh?
What if Prince Jaren is alive? Then he returns to the castle to find me sitting on his throne. I don't think he'll appreciate that."
"Jaren is dead. I told you once before that I have proof of it. Besides, the pirates off the coast of Avenia are ruthless. The reason no body was ever found is because they likely destroyed everything identifiable about him. Whatever trouble he may have caused his family, the king and queen loved Jaren. The queen in particular never gave up searching for any trace of him in the years that followed. It was all in vain. I doubt he was even alive by the time his ship sunk."
"What's your proof?"
"I present that to the boy I choose as prince, and to nobody else."
"If you can prove Jaren's dead, then can you also prove to the regents that Jaren survived?"
"At court, Jaren will confess that he has been hiding all these years in an orphanage, right under their noses. He went by the name of Sage, or Rodin, or Tobias, but he has come back now to claim the throne."
"What if another orphan steps forward to say he knew us before Jaren was killed?"
"We would say they are mistaken,
and perhaps one night that orphan would disappear. Thrones have been claimed over thinner evidence than we have, Sage. Besides, my prince will have evidence of his identity.
What?
Connor shook his head slightly.
I'll save that answer until my prince is chosen, but rest assured, it is something that will identify my choice as the prince without doubt. Now to my questions. What did Princess Amarinda talk with you about after you two left?
She's worried that the king's family is dead, despite your assurances that she shouldn't worry. She doesn't seem to believe there's any hope of Jaren being alive, and I don't think she'd want him even if he were. She's afraid, sir. Connor smiled.
We can use that to our advantage. Use her fear to make her more apt to accept the prince when I present him, so that even if she has doubts, she'll accept him because she needs it to be true.
I couldn't hide my disdain as I glared at him. It was disgusting that he'd think so quickly of how he might benefit from her pain.
Don't make that face at me, Connor cried. How convenient it must be for you to play the pious victim when it benefits you, or to be the prince, or the servant, or the orphan. Yet I must at all times be the keeper of this unholy plan. I do not celebrate my role in Carthia's future, but I've accepted it. Have you?
And the expression vanished from my face. Yes, sir, I have. I am your prince.
You think too highly of yourself. Tobias can no longer be trusted, but Rodin presents some fine advantages. I believe he has been underestimated this week. He has learned more than any of you in such a short time.
There was nothing I could say to that. He had. Connor continued.
What I wonder is if you want to be the prince. I sense you battling that decision internally, perhaps because you're afraid of the consequences of being caught, perhaps because you cannot picture yourself sitting on the throne. And yet here you are, telling me to my face that you are my prince.
I threw out a hand, then immediately regretted the gesture when the movement pinched in my back. Would you choose Rodin, who rushes toward the throne with no thought of the consequences? He has no idea what he's accepting. I have thought about it, Connor, and I am your prince. Connor clasped his hands together and a glint of triumph flickered in his eyes.
I believe that what I suspected all along was true. All you ever needed was the proper discipline and the right motivation. I can see that you are finally bending to my will, and that pleases me.
It did not please me. Tired as I was, I still had plenty of energy to be angry with his smugness. However, I simply asked, "Can I go now?" He hesitated a moment, then nodded, and I left without looking at him. As Mott escorted me back to my room, he tried to make conversation, but I ignored him. Connor's words still rang in my ears. With every step closer to the throne I took, I felt myself bending too. I only hoped I could get to the end before Connor broke me completely.